Ms. Kingsbury.
Good morning. My name is Colby Kingsbury. I represent the petitioner, Mr. Bin Rashed. This is a persecution case on appeal from the immigration judge and Board of Immigration Appeals, denying petitioner's request for withholding of removal and for protection under the Convention Against Torture, or CAT. Through this appeal, the petitioner seeks to vacate those prior rulings on the basis that the IJ and BIA did not fully consider the record evidence, nor did they logically apply the facts to the law. At the outset, it should be noted that the agency assumed the facts as true. That is, there was no explicit adverse credibility finding against petitioner or his witnesses, and the government conceded this in its brief. Taking the facts in the record as true, then, the agency's finding cannot be upheld. The record shows that, based on the events petitioner's family suffered in Yemen as a result of petitioner's political and social activities, that petitioner's family was required to flee Yemen and seek and receive asylum in the UK. Petitioner's father is a founder and a leader of the Southern Democratic Assembly, also known as Taj, and this organization seeks independence for South Yemen from the current Yemen regime. There's also evidence in the record that petitioner is specifically wanted by this Yemen regime. There is a letter from the Yemeni Human Rights Watch that states that members and founders, of course, of Taj and their families are specifically wanted by the Yemen government. This includes petitioner, his mother, his father, and his sister. In fact, their names and their pictures have been circulated in the Yemen ports. The current country reports also state that torture, arrest, detention, and serious human rights abuses occur against government critics and their families. In fact, the country report from 2005 states that the government routinely detains relatives of dissidents. And it also cites to an article from Hood in 2005 that says that in 2005 there were over 100 cases of relatives of dissidents being detained. Nonetheless, illogically, the agency concluded that petitioner would not likely face future persecution if returned to Yemen. The IJ never mentioned petitioner's father's current political activities, nor did he mention that petitioner and his family are specifically wanted by the Yemen government.
And so that's the current, that's the father's current status or his current status. You know, what's the evidence of, you know, present day interest in him or his father?
The letter from the Yemeni Human Rights Watch is from 2005. And that specifically states that petitioner's father, that petitioner himself, that his mother, and that his sister are all specifically wanted by the Yemen authorities. The BIA added nothing further to their opinion. They simply adopted the immigration judge's factual findings. What the IJ did instead was cherry-pick flowery bromides from the record or from the country reports, ignoring the fact that those same country reports state that torture and arrest and detention still occurs against dissidents and their families. The petitioner had two different witnesses that testified on his behalf. One of them was Mr. Munir Muwari, who does not know the petitioner. He was an expert in this case. Mr. Muwari, for 16 years, has been a journalist writing about Yemen. His qualifications are undisputed. Nonetheless, the IJ specifically stated that Mr. Muwari's did not accurately investigate the facts of the record. Not only is this not something that Mr. Muwari, as an expert, was required to do, but he in fact pointed out that he did verify that petitioner and his family are wanted by the Yemen authorities. He verified that petitioner's father and family sought and received asylum in the UK, and he also verified the background facts of this case. Nonetheless,
let's go back to the past persecution argument. How do you deal with the Bachi case, our case that says that brief detentions don't rise to the level of past persecution? How do you respond to that?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, with respect to this case, the facts here with respect to past persecution are not as egregious as they have been in other cases where past persecution is found. Nonetheless, the facts of what has happened to petitioner and his family in the past certainly speak to whether or not there's this presumption of whether or not there's been future persecution. And so it's important to analyze those facts correctly, as was not done, in order to determine if there would be future persecution if he's returned. Going back to Mr. Mawari's testimony, as stated, he did, in fact, verify the facts, and nonetheless, Mr. Mawari chalked up what has happened to petitioner and what would happen to petitioner as mere harassment, ignoring that the expert specifically stated that petitioner would be detained, he might disappear, he would be in deep danger, or that he might be killed. Another person that testified on petitioner's behalf was petitioner's father, but the IJ completely refused to acknowledge any corroborating testimony from the father, stating instead that father's testimony was incoherent, vague, confusing, and inconsistent. With respect to whether or not petitioner's testimony was incoherent, it appears as though the immigration judge utterly ignored the fact that there might be translation errors that would account for strange phraseology that petitioner's father would have said. And in fact, petitioner's father, who does speak English but has a thick accent, tried to correct the translator and was told by the IJ not to speak in English and to speak in his own language. With respect to whether or not his testimony was inconsistent, the IJ cited only one incident where petitioner and his father opined slightly differently about the motivations behind petitioner's detention while trying to get a passport, something neither of them could actually know, and so therefore it doesn't show any inconsistency at all. The only other thing said was that petitioner mentioned that he forgot, or petitioner's father mentioned he forgot. He actually only did this twice in the record, and one time he corrected himself immediately. Otherwise, the testimony of petitioner's and his father was utterly consistent. Now, with respect to past persecution, as we've discussed, it may not be here that the facts are egregious enough to rise to that level. Nonetheless, the case used by the immigration judge was the Beg-Zatowski decision, since the BIA and the IJ have not yet adopted a formal standard for persecution. The Beg-Zatowski decision has 10 factors that show that there may have been past persecution, including detention, arrest, interrogation, prosecution, imprisonment, illegal searches, confiscation of property, surveillance, beatings, or torture. Even though petitioner and his family met 7 of those, the IJ didn't purport to consider a majority of them. In fact, he stated there is no information in the record at all that petitioner has suffered persecution. And once again, the BIA adopted this factual finding and stated that the IJ was not clearly erroneous. Based on the facts in this record taken as true, as the government stated they were, the agency's disfavorable finding was illogical and unreasoned and should be vacated. Thank you. I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Kingsbury. Mr. Zanfardino.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Zanfardino for the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. The record here does not compel a finding that petitioner will more likely than not have his life or freedom threatened or harmed if he returns to Yemen. Turning first to past persecution, this is a separate avenue raised by petitioner. He simply suffered no harm in Yemen, cognizable rising to the level of persecution. In fact, the incident at the passport office focused more on his long hair than it did anything else. He remarked that he had long hair, which was unusual for anyone from Yemen. In fact, that's actually substantiated at pages 219 to 221 of the record. He indicated that long hair was not common, especially in Yemen, and that he was detained for his persistence in seeking a passport, which he got about a week later. That's substantiated at record 257. Where this case turns on is in whether or not the record compels he will more likely than not be harmed if he returns to Yemen. There's two avenues that petitioner has raised for this. The first involves southern Yemen, people from southern Yemen. Now, The record indicates that people from southern Yemen who were involved in the secessionist movement in 2003 were granted amnesty. The 16 leaders were granted amnesty. That's substantiated at record 576. The 16 leaders were granted amnesty, even some who had been sentenced to death in absentia. And according to the record at 576, many had returned after the 1994 civil war lasted about 2 months. Began in May 1994, ended around July 7, 1994.
What about this 2005 posting that she made reference to?
Your Honor, that is a suggestion mostly for petitioner's father. I don't recall whether or not it specifically said petitioner himself, but I would point out that petitioner has attempted to make a certain amount of hay out of the UK asylum grant. There's several problems with that. The record indicates that, and the IJ noticed this, that the standard for asylum in the UK, he could not quite tell what it was. In the United States, of course, we have reasonable possibility, which is more like Cardoza-Fonseca, and withholding of removal, which is more likely than not. The British standard, and the British record starts at page 570 of the record, indicates a reasonable likelihood. Now, that's not reasonable possibility. That's not more likely than not. The British found that petitioner's father and sister, who were referred to as respectively the first appellant and second appellant, were not persecuted in Yemen. They found that, in fact, petitioner's father was not even harassed his last year in Yemen. That's substantiated at record 578. The critical difference is with petitioner's sister, who the British government found to have a lesser risk in terms of a reasonable likelihood, she had also engaged in express political opinion. Unlike petitioner, who at record 250 to 251 most certainly did not. Petitioner's sister at record 578, this was taken into account by the British, had engaged in specific express political opinion. They opined that it might be imputed to her because of her father, but they noted that with her, there was express political opinion. Turning to the journalist witness who testified, the journalist witness attempted to have it both ways. On the one hand, he testified that critics of the government would be targeted, and if they couldn't be targeted, their families would be targeted. He said that he was such a critic. He then testified that his father was visiting Yemen at the time of the hearing before the immigration judge and did not fear any harm, in fact, was not harmed. He testified he had relatives living in Yemen, despite him being a critic of the government, and that he did not testify as to any harm to them. He was crossed on this point, and at record 350 to 351, defended himself saying, well, I'm talking about people who proffer a secessionist claim. The difference with that, then, must turn to the exhibits petitioner submitted. Petitioner submitted, starting at tab 15 of exhibit 12, which starts at page 474 of the record. Petitioner submitted 20 documentary exhibits to support his claim. Seven even touched on socialism, Yemeni secessionism, Southern Yemenis. The remaining 13 dealt with journalists. None of those dealt with journalists who somehow proffered a claim regarding secession. In sum, the record simply just does not compel a finding that he would more likely than not be harmed. The substantial evidence indicates that what petitioner's father, and the journalist witness testified to were subjective fears. But there's a two-step process that must be met here, subjective fears and objective evidence. We suggest to the court that the record does not compel that objective evidence indicates more likely than not petitioner will be harmed. Thank the court, unless there are any questions.
Thank you. Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Sanford. Ms. Kingsbury.
Your Honors, I'd like to respond to a couple of those points. First of all, the Yemeni Human Rights Watch letter that I spoke of does indeed indicate petitioner himself is wanted by the Yemen government, that his name and that his face is circulated in the Yemen ports.
Has he, in these last
I guess he came here in 99?
That's correct.
Has he been active in any political movement from the United States that could be interpreted by the Yemeni Khmer?
The petitioner himself has not been politically active. In fact, for the past 2 years, he's been detained because of this case. Another point that he raised was that there were several people who were dissidents who were able to go back to the country at some point. Petitioner's father is still politically active with his Southern Democratic Assembly, and that distinguishes him from these other people who have been able to go back. Furthermore, he mentioned that Mr. Muwari, the expert, that he was indicating that he had family back in Yemen. Well, Mr. Muwari is actually a U.S. citizen, so that provides different protections that petitioner is not going to have here. And last of all, as far as objective evidence is concerned, government mentioned that there wasn't any objective evidence. Well, as you heard me speak of before, the country reports themselves, the current ones that were used in this case, specifically indicate that government dissidents and their relatives, specifically the son of a dissident, do in fact get arrested, detained, and tortured by the government.
Is the UK a viable alternative?
We are attempting to make that happen, Your Honor. We submitted a visa application in August, and we're still waiting to find out if that will work. Thank you. I have nothing further to say.
Thank you all, counsel. Mrs. Kingsbury, did the firm take this as a pro bono matter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then you have, again, additional thanks on behalf of the court. Case is taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess.